G'day football fans, you're listening to FNR Football Nation Radio. I'm David Davutovic and welcome to this week's episode of Football Q&A. With a women's game in the spotlight courtesy of the Matildas, we're airing a special on the state of the women's game. Now, the Matildas completed a two-game series sweep against China, but in the background, intense lobbying has been taking place ahead of the women's vote that will be added to the expanded FFA Congress. The political battle will reach one almighty crescendo tomorrow, November 30, when an EGM is held to try and force through a voting structure that's been opposed by the A-League clubs and the Players' Union. November 30 is also the deadline set down by FIFA for FFA to reach consensus on this long-running reform saga, with Australia holding the smallest and least democratic Congress in world football. Now, currently, 9 of the 10 votes are held by the state and territory federations, while the A-League clubs hold just one collective vote. The Players' Union and the women's game are among the voices to be added to the new Congress, but how that vote will be broken down is still a matter of contention. Now, today we're covering all angles with several special guests, all of whom will give us a unique insight into the state of the women's game, how we've got here, and their views on how the women's vote should be broken down. Now, our first guest has been a regular on FNR on the various platforms, and it's fantastic to hear her voice again, and we speak of PFA Player Relations Executive Kate Gill. Kate, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. Now, Matilda's two-game clean sweep against China. Firstly, as a Matilda's great, now the second record goal scorer after Lisa Devanna overtook you. What did you make of the games and the Matilda's performances?
I thought both performances were really dominant. They were really aggressive by the girls, especially the one on the Wednesday night. That was just really a complete performance. I think, obviously, the second game, the girls probably weren't happy as of the performance. I think it was a bit disjointed at times and probably not up to their polished standards. But, I mean, both games, they definitely took it to China and were the better team.
We saw almost 20,000 fans turn up to the two games, Amy Park in Melbourne and, of course, Geelong, off the back of the fantastic crowds in New South Wales last month against Brazil. What do you make of it, Kate, I guess, when you put it into the context of women's football and where it's come?
Yeah, it's fantastic that the girls are really being backed, and we've always had that support from the public, but to actually see the FFA get behind it and recognise that it is a bit of a vehicle and there's massive momentum behind the women's game at the moment, and we really do need to capitalise on that. And the girls, I mean, they're crowd favourites and they turn on a quality performance every time, so why wouldn't you want to pay money to come and see these girls play?
Are you surprised that I guess how it's got to this in terms of their popularity, considering, I guess, where things were at only a few years ago?
Yeah, look, I think it's long overdue, if I'm going to be harsh about it. I think that things could have been done earlier to obviously cement this with the girls being public figures, because we've always played quality football. We're probably playing better football now, and I guess we're reaping the rewards of the legacy that's, I think, actually been left behind by Tom Samani to some degree. Mm-hmm. He's blooded these girls like the likes of Sam Kerr, Caitlin Ford, Emily Van Egmond since they were youngsters. So you're looking at these girls, they've been in a national team set up for over 10 years. And this is what creates quality depth for us. So these girls aren't even in their prime yet. They're still in their young, young 20s. So once they get to their peak, it's going to be phenomenal what they can produce. So I think it's overdue because the girls have been performing well, but they've just kind of crept it up to that next level.
Kate, you made your Matildas debut in 2004, 86 caps, 41 goals. You played, obviously, a number of those games at home. How do you compare, what's happening now to your day?
Yeah, look, you can't. It really is chalk and cheese. I mean, the public support there is just phenomenal. And to have those kind of crowd figures coming through the gates, it's fantastic. And I know the girls are really embracing it and really enjoying it for what it is. And if I had my time again, I wish I was kind of involved in it now, just to be able to have that, that fanfare behind you and that support coming from your home country. And it's not just your family and friends. These are genuine Matildas fans.
Yeah, absolutely right. And obviously, as we mentioned, in the background, there is a bit of a political battle going on with regards to the women's vote. Now, I guess the good news is that women's football will finally be acknowledged and represented at the FFA Congress. The women will have a seat at the table when it comes to the vote. But I guess the conjecture is around who holds that vote, who will hold that vote. Now, what are your views?
Yeah, look, I think you're right there. I think it's good that we will have a voice and there will be a voice for women, but it needs to be a meaningful voice. It can't just be a political spin-off and it can't be held to ransom or diluted in any way. And I think speaking from that, the players are the best place to hold that voice. They're the custodians of the game. They understand the issues. They face the challenges. So why not let them and empower them to hold that vote and use it properly?
Yeah, now, and we saw, I mean, a couple of years ago, the Matilda strike, and there was some really, stark images that still, are with us to this day. And I think it was Lydia Williams that fronted a group of 8 or 9 Matildas. They went on strike over, conditions, pay dispute, and made the, ultimate sacrifice by pulling out of a tour of the US, which, as we know, that is the ultimate tour for the Matildas, USA being the number one team in the world for a long, long time. That was a real turning point for the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And the games, they've been built off the back of this legacy. So those players who've made the countless professional, financial and personal sacrifices in pursuit of playing the game that they love, this is a legacy that they've left behind. And a failure to properly recognise that and give the players that central role within holding that voice and making sure that it's heard and that the game goes forward instead of getting stuck in this bubble and become part of a political power struggle.
I know you, among others, Kate, share the view that was a real turning point for women's sport in Australia, not just women's football. Can you just expand on that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it brought to light, and it definitely brought into the public view that the lack of respect that had been around for women's football in a sense, but also women's sport, and to say, hang on a minute, it's not fair. And all we're asking for is a little bit of respect and to be treated with some degree of fairness and some degree of equality. And I think it kind of put women's sport back on the map. And from there, you've just had a massive boom. I mean, the netball, they've gone to extreme highs in the way that they look after their players and the conditions that they've afforded. Obviously, the AFL have stepped in and they've remunerated their players and provided conditions for their players, which are fantastic. The Big Bash League just keeps getting better, and Cricket Australia itself and the equity that they offer to their girls. So I think it definitely created that catalyst for change, that moment in time, and I think every sport has benefited from that.
You're listening to Football Q&A and we're talking to Matilda's great and PFA Player Relations Executive Kate Gill. And we're focusing in on the state of the women's game with an eye on tomorrow's vote, the FFA Congress, and the much-debated women's vote. Now, Kate, you're obviously highly engaged with the players, the Matildas, the W League players, as well as the internationals. I guess specifically on the Matildas and the local W League players, how engaged are they in the political side of things and the administrative side of the game?
Yeah, look, I guess they hear about it in spits and spades, and we do very well to educate the players and to make sure that they're abreast of everything. And we do it through digital platforms and in a way that they can kind of understand it and digest it, because it can be get quite hard to rack your brain about it. I mean, I struggle day to day when they keep changing the structure of who's on the Congress and what they want the formation to look like. So I don't think the players get it from that sense, but I think from understanding that the women's game needs a meaningful voice, all the players recognise that, and I think they recognise that they have an important role to play in that, and to make sure that it's looked after. And I think it's not just about the players as well. Like, we need to support women in administrative roles, in leadership roles. We need to bring that knowledge back into the FFA within the way that it's run and it's operated, because the issues that face women are much different to what faces the men's game, and that needs to be taken into account in all levels, grassroots, semi-professional, amateur, elite, no matter which way you look at it.
Now, I know a lot of our listeners probably struggling to get their head around the voting structure as well, Kate. We've had 9-4-2s, 9-4-1-1s, 9-4-1-1-1s, and no, we're not talking about on-field formations. It is the breakdown of the new Congress. Can you just sort of explain to us where it's at right now in terms of the women's vote, what the FFA are proposing, and obviously how you guys want to see it play out?
Yeah, so the model that the FFA have put forward to try and meet, obviously, what FIFA statutes to come in line with, obviously being democratic and have gender equality embedded within the Congress structure, is a 9-4-1-1 model. So essentially there's 9 votes for the member feds, 4 for the A-League clubs, 1 for the PFA, who represents the players, and then 1 for the women's game in a community kind of sense. So what we've been, I guess, campaigning for and have had the full support of the A-League and 2 of the member federations is to have 2 votes for the women's game. So essentially the model would be a 9 member federation vote, 5 for the A-League and 2 for the PFA. And within that 2, 1 would be representative purely of the women's game and the female voice.
And just talk to us about, I guess, the negotiations with the FFA on this. And we know that there was some pretty tense discussions back in August when FIFA and the AFC were in town. I guess just reflecting on that and what are the most recent discussions that have been had?
Yeah, I don't think you could quite call them negotiations. I think it's been a very authoritative process that's been handed down from the FFA, and the way they've kind of looked to strip back and dilute the Congress structure so that they still hold that power balance. It's very much a power struggle, and I don't know what's right. I don't know what's wrong. I've just obviously been privy to be actually sitting in there and see how the negotiations have worked themselves. But I know that we need a Congress that's going to represent the professional game, because at the moment it's totally excluded from any decision making within the FFA.
Kate, let's presume that, you know, this gets sorted. Where is the women's game going to head in the next few years, and what's the W League going to look like in 5 years' time?
Yeah, look, I think the women's game is the biggest growth for football within Australia, and it holds the massive amount of potential that it has. And I'd like to see the W League become fully fledged, a home and away series, so that there's a balanced competition. I think that even the inclusion of another team we could look into. But just making sure that the girls, obviously, we've set the foundations through the CBA, so there is a minimum salary in play. But obviously for that to increase, and then the conditions around that and the high performance around that, because essentially we want to have our best players playing in Australia week in, week out. We don't need them to go overseas. If we can give them that, and there's a breeding ground here, and then obviously we have the talent coming through, I think that's the best thing for Australian women's football and football in this country.
And the girls are really passionate about the local scene, the Matildas, and particularly the W League. And Michelle Heyman and Sam Kerr made some really strong comments in recent days about the fact that there was no international break during the China series, and of course the top of the table clash between Canberra United and Perth Glory went ahead, obviously without Heyman and Kerr, and talking about, you know, double standards in scheduling. So they're really passionate about growing the game and having, I guess, the right mechanisms in place, aren't they?
Yeah, the players are the biggest advocates for the W League. I mean, all those Matildas girls, they want to play here. They love coming back and playing in the W League. And I take my hat off to both Sammy and Michelle for publicly airing their grievances for the fact that the W League still ran while the Matildas were playing international matches. And I mean, it's hard to, you know, you can't kind of go and blame the person who's scheduling, but I think this is an issue, not just in the W League, in the A League, that we don't recognise the international match calendar. And I definitely think that the league should have been stopped, and the girls should have been afforded the right to play for their W League teams. Like, we can have midweek games to catch up there. So I think this is an issue that we need to look at moving forward, and how we structure the league and make sure that the W League is given the, I guess, the due respect it's deserving of.
And speaking of the Matildas and being underutilised, I mean, I think the last month has really shown how much potential there is there. And, you know, imagine the Matildas played in, you know, every month in each city. And imagine they went to Perth and played a home game in Perth with Sammy Kerr there. I mean, they would go close to filling the stadiums, wouldn't they?
Yeah, most definitely. And, I mean, if you're attracting quality competition, I mean, they've kind of... they're drawing the line in the sand now, and they're asking teams to come and inviting them over to play. You know, come and challenge them, come and give us a game. So if we could get a game in Perth against a US team, a German team, or a French team, like, that's massive. That would be a massive crowd, and that would be a phenomenal display of women's football at its best.
So, Kate, how is this all going to play out tomorrow and I guess over the next couple of weeks? Because it sounds like, you know, FIFA have got meetings coming up in early December where that will ultimately dictate whether a normalisation committee is installed here in Australia. How do you see it playing out?
Look, I assume through the AGM that the model will be passed through the mechanisms there and under the Australian law. I don't think that will be an issue getting that through. And obviously, the next question is whether FIFA accepts that. And judging by their statutes, I don't think so, because it's still not democratic and there's still no gender equality embedded in there. So I think we are going to look to be moving down the normalisation path.
So as it stands, have you almost given up hope of the players holding that women's vote in, well, I guess as of tomorrow in the current form, unless FIFA steps in?
Yeah, I think unless FIFA steps in, I don't think that the FFA are going to change their standpoint on what they want their Congress structure to look like, unfortunately. So I think we'll keep advocating for it as strongly as we can and for as long as we can. And then obviously we're all put in the capable hands of FIFA, or not so capable hands of FIFA. We'll see what happens. And I guess we'll be left kind of wondering what's going to happen.
And I guess for the layman football fan out there, it's such a complex issue to wrap your head around. But FIFA stepping in, what will that mean? Is it I guess the doom and gloom that so many people are painting, or may it actually be a positive next step for the Australian game?
Yeah, look, it could be extremely positive. They could come in, they could put in a normalising committee and then re-elect a board in line with what we're asking for. So I guess we're kind of on the flip of a coin here. It could go one way, it could go the other. And I guess we'll all find out sooner rather than later, unfortunately.
Mm. And I guess, are there any messages for Australian football fans, or for the FFA for that matter, leading into tomorrow's crescendo, which you know, we'll obviously decide where things go to from here?
Yeah, I think we just really have to have a good hard look at ourselves and ask what we really want out of the game. I think we need people in those decision making positions that are passionate and have a vision for the game. I think we're not, you know, it's not intrinsic. We just can't look and operate within Australia. We are a global game. We need to kind of look outside and have more of a worldly view, and we need people in leadership roles that understand that and want to be bold and ambitious for the game and put a vision out there. Like, if we put it out there and we fail, then we're not going to die wondering, you know. Like, we need to have big, strong, ambitious kind of visions for where we want this game to go.
And I guess in light of that, it was so disappointing to see Ange Postecoglou quit his Socceroos post, because he has been one of the people that's certainly been, you know, bold in his statements for the Australian game. And he's also always been very complimentary of the Matildas and the women's side of things, isn't he?
Yeah, no, he has. And I think that's probably where his frustration has just come to its end, and he probably can't deal with it anymore when he sees that insular perspective of things, when he sees a worldly view of things and he knows where he wants to take things and he wants the game to grow, because he's so passionate and he loves it. And you hear that every time you hear him speak. Like, I haven't heard a more passionate man apart from my CEO, John DeLitter, who I work with, speak about football like that. And I think that was great to have that in such a leader through the Socceroos. And you could see that in the way the boys played the game. They were unwavering in his belief for what he wanted, and they played for him. And it's a real shame to have lost him.
Absolutely. And Kate, we saw and heard your fantastic special comments on Fox Sports for the Matildas games, and of course the W League season. But just on the Matildas, the Asian Cup coming up in April, which double up as the World Cup qualifiers, are you expecting to see a Matildas win there?
Yeah, on their current form, yes, and on the current form of the Asian competition. I mean, China and Japan are going through huge rebuilding phases at the moment, and I mean, lucky enough for us that our rebuilding isn't going to happen for another decade. So we're in a very favourable and fortunate position at the moment, and we really need to capitalise on that. And I know that the girls have high ambitions for themselves, and why shouldn't they? They're playing quality football at the moment, and I think it's only going to continue to get better.
And pushing forward, as we mentioned, the FIFA Women's World Cup in France in 2019. I mean, you touched on it earlier. It is a very youthful side. Lisa Devan is the only one that, you know, perhaps question marks as to whether she'll be there, but she'll certainly give it a red hot crack, and she's doing everything to, you know, to push forward and be part of this team. But they could really give the World Cup a shake, couldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely could, and they have done in on the last occasion and also at the Olympics. It's just that final hurdle where we haven't quite got there, and I think this time it will be different. I think we've got the players, we've definitely got the players, we've got the capability, and the more games that the girls have together, it gives them that more time to prepare, and it's great that the FFA have really backed them and got on board and given them the opportunity to play, you know, international friendlies as often as they have.
Yeah, we'd love to spend the entire time talking about football, the Matildas, the tournaments, etc. But unfortunately, in the current climate, the political situation must be discussed. And Kate, we thank you so much for your insights and your honesty ahead of what is a potentially seminal moment for Australian football.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I guess we'll all wait and see what eventuates come Thursday.
Absolutely. Watch this space. That was Matilda's legend and PFA Player Relations Executive Kate Gill. You're listening to Football Q&A on FNR Football Nation Radio. More after the break.